Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world amped that crime is up. I'm Jake Mintz, joined in a real room alongside my favorite podcast host of all time, Jordan Schusterman.
Hey, it's me. High five. Woo! Boom. You heard that on both of our microphones. We are here in an undisclosed hotel in San Diego, California. It is 9:43 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And yes, Jake, as you said, crime. You know, we talk a lot of time about crime rates. Crime rates tonight, unanimous. Fred McGriff is in the Hall of Fame. We'll talk about that later. We're at the winter meetings. Of course, we are. Our winter meetings experience has already experienced some level of logistical challenges in that our producer, our lovely producer, Chris, who will be putting this together for you fine folks on Monday morning. Chris was supposed to be on the same connecting flight to San Diego as I, but unfortunately, his first connection did not work out so well. So Chris is still on his way to San Diego. But Jake and I made it. We are here looking at each other, and we're here. We're very excited, and we're going to preview the winter meetings at least a little bit, and hopefully before too much news breaks on Monday morning when you're hopefully listening to this.
I'm really disappointed because I was looking forward to finding out what an Australian smelled like. Well, and now that Chris is late, I have to wait a couple more hours.
Chris will make his way here at some point. The way this pod is going to work, because listen, we're not going to go too long because one, news could break at any second, and the other is that we're going to be recording a million podcasts this week. So you'll be hearing plenty from us all throughout the week once we are actually on site and reacting and whatnot. But we wanted to take some time on Sunday evening to kind of set the stage. And so we're going to give you our top five biggest questions going into the winter meetings. And then we will spend some time on Fred McGriff, the newest Hall of Famer, at the end of this episode. But Jake, let us begin with, first of all, hi. Nice to see you. I did just see you recently over Thanksgiving. So it's not as dramatic of a reunion.
But I did get a haircut for the first time in five months.
It's true. You're wearing a hat, and also your hair is just, yeah, it's just there's less of it. So how are you feeling about that? I got a haircut, but it's pretty normal Jordan haircut. Yours looks like you look a little different.
I feel nude, man. I feel, but people don't know because it's a podcast, but just listen to how my hair sounds different.
Yeah, see if you can tell. You can tell if the takes are maybe more or less balanced.
I'm less weighed down.
How much is on the top of his head? I guess we'll find out.
Question number one, Jordan. Leading into the wiener meetings, the winter meetings.
Let me tell you, it is also a wiener meetings. A
lot of wieners here, a lot of wieners, and I mean that both a lot of nerds, a lot of people with wieners. But my first question for you, Jordan, is how do the New York Mets pivot after the exit of Jacob DeGrom? Did Steve Cohen,
the Exodus,
play enough basketball to know how important a pivot is?
Oh, pivot. I wasn't sure if you were going like for a rebound or what you were going for there. I mean that pivot foot, right? Triple threat. I think that's when, right? If anyone went to basketball practice when they were 9 years old, triple threat, right? You could shoot, you could pass, you can dribble.
The world was your oyster.
and Steve Cohen, now that Jacob DeGrom has left, he has all this money. He can sign Verlander, he can trade for someone, he can sign two starters, he can sign Brandon Nimmo. There's so many options, probably more than triple threat for Steve Cohen. The point is, the Mets have to do something. Will they do something here? I don't know. Here's the thing I'm curious about in terms of more of a practical physical scene setting here. Will we see Steve Cohen this week?
Is he here?
With our eyes? I don't know. I think I doubt it. But maybe. What do you think?
I think we do.
Okay.
I think we see Steve Cohen.
Right, you're going over 0.5 Steve Cohen sightings.
Yeah, I'll take the hard over on that.
Interesting. All right.
Now, what is interesting to me about the Mets having to pivot is that if this exact scenario had happened 4 years ago, that the best pitcher in the world had left, Mets fandom would be at, you know, DEFCON 3 on the Jews, as Kanye West once said. Not a fan of him, by the way.
No.
That being said, times have changed.
They have.
Because member of the tribe, Steve Cohen, shouts out, has bought the New York Mets, and he is the 96th richest person in the world, and he treats them the same way that you or I would treat a regular hobby. And because of that, Steve Cohen is going to do something. He is going to pay Carlos Rodon or Justin Verlander or both or Brandon Nimmo or Shaka to get Aaron Judge. And because of that, we know the end of the Mets offseason.
Yeah.
Right. We know almost for a fact. I mean, you know, many things can happen, but I feel pretty confident that when we show up to Port St. Lucie on February 28th, there's a rich, famous baseball player currently on the Mets.
I totally agree. And again, I think I've mentioned this before, but we think about, okay, well, how are all the Mets fans on Twitter reacting? Well, you know who a Mets fan on Twitter is? It's Steve Cohen. He's also a Mets fan on Twitter. and he's a Mets fan who gets to make decisions about the Mets. So he is well aware. I mean, it was clearly, you know, how much they really wanted to retain it, would even if they were given the opportunity, would they have matched the Rangers' offer? I doubt it. But the point is that they will have to respond in some way. And, yeah, do we see that response here? I don't know.
This week, who knows? We really have no idea. Let's move on to question number two, and that will be, who is the third team in on Aaron Judge? Now, ahead of these winter meetings, Jeff Passan of, I believe it's called ESPN, reported that there is an expectation that Judge will indeed sign this week. That is maybe not the expectation, but it is somewhat.
There's a lot of buzz that is pinpointing this week as a likely finish.
Correct.
Here. We also got a report from Ken Rosenthal saying that it is likely to be 9 years.
Yep.
Also not that surprising, considering that's just a year past what the other offers have been.
The only two teams that we know for certain are in on the mix for that potential 9-year deal are the Yankees, heard of them, and the San Francisco Giants. I've only recently heard of them. The Dodgers are in for a higher AAV on a shorter term.
Which we hear about every free agent.
Every year. It doesn't matter. They're probably in on
Dodgers are interested in the high AAV.
Wow, 1 year.
So let's move the Dodgers aside, because that's not the third team we're talking about. We're talking about the dude that just hit 62 home runs, and truly there has not been a single other team that has emerged as maybe we have something. Because remember, with DeGrom, it did kind of feel the same way with Mets and Rangers, but there were some Braves rumors, and then they're reporting after the fact. The Rays, right? We actually had some other names floating in here. This has been Yankees and Giants since the last Out of the World Series, and it's weird. Like, there's not one other team that would consider signing the guy that just hit 62 home runs?
It reminds me of the good old days, Yankees-Giants, where you could just walk across the East River and go see them at the Polo Grounds.
The only teams that existed.
Jordan, I've been watching a lot of Shark Tank recently, and I know you love Shark Tank.
It's so funny you say that, because I haven't been watching Shark Tank recently, and I've been sad about that, because I should be watching more Shark Tank recently.
Do you know when in Shark Tank a person seeking a deal walks in and they get an offer from like Damon, and they get an offer from Kevin maybe, but they really want a third offer? They want that offer from Mark. They want that offer from Lori, right?
And then Damon.
But the person looking for the offer just stands there. And they kind of like turn their head awkwardly at the other people. And they're like, anything else? That's Aaron Judge
Damon,
right now.
And Damon and Kevin are like, you have two great offers. What are you doing?
What are you doing? And for that reason, I'm out, right? Then they pull out. That probably won't happen with the Yankees and the Giants. But that's what we need. Right. Aaron Judge is looking around the room and looking for a third team.
It's like there's not one other team. That's just so crazy. Look, I know there's not every team is going to sign somewhere $300 million. I realize that. But okay, so let's just say it now. Let's move the Dodgers aside, because I do believe that they are still probably at least in touch, whatever.
Do you want to, on the count of three, pick a third team? Say it out loud.
Are we picking a third team that we would like to see realistic in the mix, or that we think will be the third team to emerge? Because here's the other more realistic possibility, is that it will be floated as mystery team at the last second just to possibly drive up another $10 million or whatever, and we don't actually find out who the third team was, or the third team never existed and is entirely negotiation. But okay. Third team, yes, let's do it. Let's say a third team in are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Rangers.
Cubs. Ooh, okay.
Interesting.
Right. So Rangers, okay, I mean that, yeah, right. I mean, it's not like they've clearly shown, like, well, as we just talked about on the DeGrom pod, like, they're trying to win right now. So they certainly don't care about what Aaron Judge costs when he's 38. Because by then, Semien's old, Seager's old, like, whatever.
Texas will be in the ocean.
And Jacob DeGrom has thrown who knows how many innings. Jacob DeGrom's very old. You know, he's long gone at that point. So
explain the Cubs to me.
So much about the Cubs has been shortstop, and I hope that they are going for it.
So you think they do like a Michael Morse situation and they have Judge play shortstop?
Well, no, it's more that the NL Central stinks. And you have talked about it, and I agree, that they could spend their way into contention, I think. And while I think the shortstop is a more logical place to start, if they do want to get into it, and like they certainly have the money to spend, and that would be a another – it's not like Cubs fans like, – again, this has not been rumored at all. But it just feels like another option to get good fast is to sign Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge does not make them better than the Cardinals, but it might make them better than the Brewers. Let's move on from Aaron Judge and talk about those shortstops. Jordan, do we see one of the four shortstops signed during this week? And if so, who is the most likely?
Right. So something I keep thinking about for this whole offseason, and I've been thinking about a lot in terms of the catchers, which we'll get to in a little bit, but sequencing, right? They don't always go in the order. Like, everyone just assumes, like, oh, Dansby will just be the last one standing, and he'll just wait until the other three who are better than him sign, whatever. It seems like Turner is the one that we've had the most substantial rumors about, particularly with the Phillies. And so it seems like that is the most likely to go first. We really haven't had that much Correa stuff beyond...
The Twins are interested.
The Twins really would like to retain him, which totally makes sense. We've heard some, you know, disrespectful Bogarts Red Sox reporting.
That is really interesting, right? Each of the shortstops has had like one major rumor.
Right.
Turner, the Phillies have won him.
Yes.
Bogarts, the Red Sox are ignoring him.
Even though they said it was the number one priority.
Yep. For Swanson, it's like the Braves are poo-pooing it and the Cubs are interested.
The Cubs are interested, right.
And then Correa. It's
like Twins really want it back, and we'll wait.
We'll see what happens.
Right. Huh. So that's the thing. So I still would assume that Turner is the most likely to go first. But I don't know. And I think it's a pretty good chance that happens this week.
I'll take Turner signing this week while we're here. That's my prediction. I think Dansby is going to be a while.
Yeah. Also, let me say, man, Philly's Twitter is real thirsty for Trey. And I get it. I mean, it would be a great fit. It would be really cool. And he's awesome. But man, that one's really – come on. Didn't you guys listen to our shortstops pod? Bogarts, he's most likely to succeed.
You got to pick one.
Do Bogarts. He's great. Anyway, whatever. They're all great. So that's a good one. Okay. What is our next question?
So it is a foregone conclusion that Sean Murphy, not the one that you know from the pub near your house, but the one on the A's, gets traded by the time you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, or certainly by the end of the week. Like that – and we will address it at some point this week, I'm sure.
But my question for you, Jordan, is do we see a bigger name than Sean Murphy traded? I would argue that Sean Murphy, the name, is one of the biggest names in the world. Think about how many Sean Murphys there are.
And how many, like, different spellings of Sean Murphy you probably have.
Yeah.
Good point.
That's a big name, Sean Murphy.
Good point. Now, here I'm going to – so let's talk about who that could be. Okay, so Brian Reynolds, we got the Brian Reynolds.
Well, let's talk about Sean Murphy very quickly. I don't want to just run by Sean Murphy.
By the way, Brian Reynolds, another name that there's probably a lot of.
It's probably a lot of Brian Reni. Sean Murphy, the catcher for the Oakland Athletics.
Because
the A's are, one, very cheap. Mm-hmm. Their payroll, I think, right now is around $35 million. Two, their best rookie is a catcher. Their two best prospects are both catchers. And so for them, that's Daniel Susak.
Oh, Susak, right.
And Tyler Soderstrom, who's maybe not a catcher. Yeah. Whatever. They have a lot of catchers.
Shea Langler is bigly ready.
They're going to trade Sean Murphy. And that means it is not all every day where a well above average catcher is on the market. Teams in the mix look like the Cardinals, the Guardians, the Rays, Red Sox.
I literally feel like this will already have been settled by the time people listen.
But that's Sean Murphy.
Let's move past Sean Murphy. We'll talk
anyone
about
bigger
when it actually happens. So I mean, Reynolds with the trade request is a big one. But here's I'm going to kind of flip this a little bit, because while Reynolds and Murphy, who are awesome players, who are under contract for multiple more seasons and would cost a ton of prospects, they are not, again, because they've been on the Pirates and the A's, most people don't totally understand how good they are, what exactly who they are. So I'm going to throw out another name here. I'm going to throw out Gleyber Torres as a name, who is way more famous than Brian Reynolds and Sean Murphy. And I don't get a great read on their Yankees. The Yankees right now, we're so focused on Judge that, like, I could see a world where they get Judge and then they just kind of like chill and bask in that for a little bit. But as you've pointed out, like, then you're just kind of back where you were when the season ended, and that wasn't exactly the greatest ending. So Glaber's an interesting piece here with 1 year left on his contract. I've punted on the idea of him as a Mariner, but I still think he could be an interesting trade candidate if they do actually want to let the kids play. Certainly Peraza would be ready opening day, and then Volpe presumably at some point soon. So I don't know. Is that really a great idea? I don't know. But in terms of a big name of like a famous guy left, because other than that, like, again, I you know, I'm writing about this for Fox this week. Like, I just, there's not that many huge names I could really see on the move. But what do you think?
Can you come up
with someone else that's like more famous?
More famous, yeah. Eric Hosmer, I think, will get traded again this week. There's my irrational prediction.
Okay.
And then the Marlins will trade of their arms.
So the Marlins was the other one I thought about. Pablo Lopez, certainly, but it seems like they're also shopping some of their younger guys. And then I just think the Cardinals, I mean, whether it's Sean Murphy or not, they seems like they have a move to make. Like, Nolan Gorman seems like easy trade bait, and I know he's not that famous yet because he hasn't been in the league that long, but that's a pretty big prospect name that I would keep an eye on there. So I would still bet against it. I think Murphy will
move,
and I think the Reynolds thing is not getting resolved anytime soon.
It's an underwhelming batch of trade candidates this year this winter meetings, and I think in some ways that's a good thing. Like, the teams that are not trying to win in 2023 – are fewer in my head. Like, the teams that are trying to win are Cincy, Oakland, the Nats, and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's on the line. But it's really those three, and they already made all their trades.
Correct.
And so that's the thing. They already did it, right?
There are not a lot of famous people.
Yeah, and that's fine. So, look, it's not like we have a shortage of famous free agents to talk about. So we'll be okay.
And I'm sure we're going to get some trade that we're not expecting.
That's what's the most fun about it. That's why I'm always most interested in the trade market, because they're coming up with shit you could not possibly come up with on your, you know, message board or terrible Twitter response. We're all doing it. It's okay. I understand. All right. What's next?
Last question. For the very first time in MLB history, there is a freaking draft lottery. And that draft lottery is happening this week here at the winter meetings Tuesday evening. Jordan, what the fuck is this going to look like?
I don't feel like going through all the details about it, but the point is that the top six picks will be determined by draft lottery. Yes, you said, for the first time ever. The teams, of course, with the highest probability of winning the first overall pick in the 2023 draft are those teams you just mentioned, the Nationals, the A's, and the Pirates, actually, who won the tiebreaker for worst record previous season with the Reds. So those are the three teams with the highest odds. But, I mean, it's a big difference, right? I mean, 60% chance is different than 100% chance when you lose 107 games like the Nationals did. But here they are. And the thing, who wins, of course, we're interested. I just want to know what this looks like as a television event, as an event that we're going to see live, right? I mean, we're going to see it in some version live. I don't know. Maybe it won't be a live event here, and it'll just be broadcast, and we're just going to find. I don't know. So I have no idea what it's going to look like. I think there's all kinds of possibilities for just like awkward, weird mistakes.
Bingo.
Because
they
haven't done
this
before. And I'm sure that baseball has talked to the NBA about like, how the fuck do you do this? And it's not the exact same format, but I'm sure that they've consulted and been like, how do you do this? How do you broadcast this? And now in the NBA, they have a bunch of representatives at each, like, is that going to be a thing here? Like, as far as we've heard very little information about this. So that's really what it is. What will this look like? Will there be screw ups? And, yeah, who's going to get the number one pick?
It will be uncomfortable. If you are a Schadenfreude type of person, I recommend tuning in for this. It will be cringy. There will be people – there will be, like, awkward silences.
Probably.
There will be people not often on television who have to be on television.
That's possible,
yep. Someone will get too excited and it will become a thing. Like, just tune in for this. We've never seen it before. It could go completely off the rails. And it's just going to be funny, right?
Yes,
it's just going to be bizarre.
Yeah, it's history.
So that's the winter meetings preview. We will be coming to you twice a day, two-a-days, like a high school football player. So make sure you tune in and subscribe and listen to all of the wonderful things that we are putting inside of your ears. We will have guests. We will have hopefully some coaches, some general managers, maybe even Jordan Schusterman himself will be on the show. And before we get out of here and go have a beer, let's talk about crime dog.
Yeah.
Let's talk about crime dog.
So, as I mentioned at the end of one of our recent podcasts, we had a Hall of Fame election tonight, weirdly. This is the contemporary era ballot. Basically what this is okay, let's give a chance for players who the writers do not vote in. For whatever reason, for good or for bad, there should be another way for players to get into the Hall of Fame that does not involve getting 75% of the BBWA electorate to vote for you with 10 years on the ballot. And Fred McGriff, because for a lot of reasons, did not get in. I don't know what the highest percentage he got was. It was not anywhere near 75% at any point. But the dude has 493 home runs and a bunch of All-Star games and was tremendously likable and most conveniently and probably importantly for this ballot, zero steroid whispers to speak of, despite playing in, of course, the heart of the steroid era. I was not surprised at all to see him get in. To see him get all 16 votes of the 16-person committee is hilarious, but like, good for him. We didn't grow up watching McGriff. To me, I always looked at his career and like, yeah, he could be in. I wouldn't like passionately stump for him, but like, I get it. I just get it way more than Harold Baines getting in. And so for that reason, I'm like, yeah, cool, awesome, good for him. But maybe, we certainly don't have any personal connection to it.
Yeah, maybe this is a boring take, but like, I'm happy for Fred McGriff, yeah. And I can't get worked up about Hall of Fame stuff anymore.
Yep.
It is, as part of my own mental health journey, something that I have left behind in my past. And so when this announcement came out and I was on the plane and I paid for the Wi-Fi and I saw that, you know, the crime dog was in, I thought, huh, I guess I'll go to his baseball reference page today, because as people were born in 1995, like, I have no emotional connection to Fred McGriff. I hope he's a happy person and that his family is ecstatic to see him honored. And that's all I have to say about Fred McGriff. Now, let me say this. I am more amped that Curt Schilling was told again by a different electorate of people to go fuck himself and pound sand.
Yeah.
That fires me up. Yeah. That I'm amped about. Now, the last takeaway from this vote is that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, the steroid gods, both got only four.
Maybe less than four, right? So they only reported that McGriff got 16 of 16. And again, this is an electorate that features Hall of Famers, Greg Maddux, Jack Morris, Ryan Sandberg, Lee Smith, Frank Thomas, Alan Trammell, some executives, Theo Epstein, Kim Ng on there, as well as a couple media members.
So it's 16, not us.
16-person committee. So you need 12 votes to get in, and each voter can only vote for three. So that's another important detail. McGriff got all 16, so hilarious. He's unanimous Hall of Famer. Unanimous Hall of Famer.
Him and Mariano Rivera.
And then, which I can't remember that ever happening on these ballots, so that's funny on itself. Don Mattingly got 8 votes. Again, not surprising in terms of very popular among former players and whatever. And then Curt Schilling did get 7 votes, and I'm not surprised that he did get... I guess that's about still the same percentage that he was getting from the writers at the end. Dale Murphy 6, and then fewer than 4, Albert Bell, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Rafael Palmeiro. So really this tells us is that on any future random weird era balance that the Hall of Fame organizes, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are going to have to really get a very specific group of people that want to vote for them. It seems like they are allowed to be on these ballots again. I don't know when that's going to be, but for now it is not a great sign. And for people that really care about them being in the Hall of Fame, I wouldn't count on that anytime soon.
I will bet $80 million that Jack Morris voted for Curt Schilling.
Yeah, I would say the one ballot I would love to know is Theo Epstein. That is the one who I would love to know. But I'm not surprised, because again, if you looked at this list of players, it is very clear. I mean, like, Fred McGriff played with Greg Maddux and Chipper Jones, who was on this committee. It's like...
It's very
weird. Obviously, they're going to, you know, but it's fine. Again, awesome for Fred McGriff, but it is kind of weird to think about how these people are voting and all the different relationships that go into these things. And like Frank Thomas, right? Like Frank Thomas is a guy who, a Hall of Famer, who you think would be, but he's been very like anti-PEDs in the past. And I have no idea if he has any sort of relationship with Barry Bonds or whatever, but
very
it's just weird.
Pro-Nugenics, anti-PEDs.
That's true.
Well, it's almost as if one senator per election cycle was voted on by the other senators. It's just very bizarre.
I actually don't mind that there is like another chance for the people who don't, like, especially because some of these ballots have been so crowded recently with the 10-person limit, self-imposed stupid rule by the Hall of Fame, whatever. So I don't mind that there are these other ballots. It just makes it hard and kind of weird to talk about.
Last thing, I think there should be one other avenue to get into the Hall of Fame. if you break into the museum, Ocean's 11 style,
and put your plaque
and
up,
and it's there in the morning and security doesn't recognize it, you're in. So like, you know, if Nick Punto or me, you know, or anyone wants to sneak on in, drive up to Cooperstown and do a little, you know,
I like this plan.
Tiptoeing around, you're in the Hall of Fame. You're in it. You made it.
John Chestakovsky, this was Jake's idea, not mine.
Very clear. Thank you all for listening.
That is our brief preview
of these winter meetings. A big shout out to our producer, Chris Tyler.
Hopefully we will see him at the hotel bar later this evening. Or at the very least tomorrow morning when we are recording the next episode of this podcast. But thank you all for listening, and enjoy. This is going to be a crazy week, and we are excited to see what happens next. All right, we'll talk to you guys soon. Goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.